First, I would like to say that there are no financial relationships within the last 12 months for me to disclose. But this is going to be a change of pace compared to the things that you've heard before. So this is a different kind of an approach to things, and I hope that you find this as interesting as I have. About a year ago, a special episode or edition of the British medical journal, The Lancet, was devoted to adherence in physical activity because of the relationship of physical activity with chronic conditions, and also because inactivity is becoming an increasing problem even in the less developed countries. We probably in this room mostly are aware that activity is decreases or has been seen to decrease with increasing age. One study suggested that people over 60, let me move this along, that people over age 60 accrue about 0 minutes of vigorous physical activity per day on a regular basis. But despite these things that don't sound so good, I realized that I personally knew several people who were very active and had been very active throughout their entire adult lives. So I became curious about what it was about these people that made them able to continue to be regularly physically active when so many other people found this a struggle. Also, a cross-sectional study by Quindry and colleagues suggested that motivations for activity change from different age bands. So this made me wonder what a how these motivations might change over time if I was able to look at people not cross-sectionally, but able to look at the same people. Obviously, and I am a non-traditional student, you might have caught on to that, and longitudinal research presents a big challenge for me at my age. So, but a retrospective examination is an alternative to look at lifespan activity. And so this research represents a retrospective and exploratory examination of people. My goals with this research were to come up with some possible indicators for future potential research or for things that might help with intervention planning. Now, and I want to, and I'd like to explicitly state, it's not on the slide, the purpose of this research was to identify characteristics of lifelong active older adults by exploring how they describe their activities, experience, and values. I'm going to talk a little bit about the methods because I think that, at least based on my experiences, there aren't as many people using qualitative approaches. So I just want to give you a little bit of an overview of how I did this because it's going to sound different than most of than the earlier presentations. I used what I'm calling a modified multiple case study design. The case was the active older adult, multiple because I talked to more than one. And the modified is because this was predominantly based on interviews, whereas a true case study design often encompasses many different kinds of data collection. Now, I did have some observational data because, as I said, I knew some people. I had some emails, and I had some other information, but it was predominantly interview research. The participants consisted initially of just people that I knew, people that I had seen in activity, people that I had seen in active events, and from there, I used a modified snowball sampling technique to have those participants contact some other participants. And so as it turned out, not everyone was from Mississippi. I did the research in Mississippi, but ended up with some participants who actually were from other parts of the world, as far away as California. The age range of participants was between 50 and 73. So I actually have younger, older adults in this. And since I'm 51, I'm a younger, older adult myself, so I feel okay with that label. So as I said, the oldest was, let me backpedal, the youngest in the study was 53, and then the oldest was 73. 11 females and 5 males comprised the sample. And as I said, data collection was done using interviews, used a semi-structured interview, and the interview guide I developed looking at the correlates of physical activity and adherence from the existing literature, with one addition. I was particularly interested in the role of the active parent because I had had an active parent. So I put that item in because I wanted to see, I had a feeling myself that having active parents would result in people being more active. So the interviews averaged around 55 minutes. Several were conducted in person, but several were also conducted by telephone. I audio recorded the interviews. I personally transcribed the interviews using a simple transcription procedure that's advocated by Dressing and colleagues, and then used in vivo version 10 eventually to analyze the data. In vivo is qualitative data processing software. So the data, I coded the data first using a structural coding scheme for the items in the interview guide, and then I did a second open coding of the data that was more exploratory, just to see what items emerged out of the data. So after the exploratory coding, I reconstructed the data back into themes, and I have three main themes. I have a lot of findings. If you can imagine how much data there is in 16 interviews that averaged an hour, it's many, many pages of data. So there are a lot of findings, but for the purposes of this presentation, I'm going to focus on the three themes. Since this was an inductive approach, I went back into the literature and looked at where there might be theoretical things that were associated with the themes that I found. And so that's what I have up here on this slide, are the themes and then the theories that they sort of align with. The three themes there you will see are reflexive redefinition, juxtaposition, and evolution. Reflexive redefinition was the theme that I labeled to the kinds of things where people looked back in their past and redefined what they had done as children as exercise. So repeatedly people said, we were exercising. We thought we were playing, but we were exercising. I didn't realize I was actually working my cardio system. Now this is people looking back and talking about when they're 7 or 8 years old. So Ross and colleagues, and this is back in the late 80s, early 90s, had done some, this is from psychology, had looked at people's memory and posited that if people view their personality as stable, they will look back in time and see that they were the same kind of person. So when you see yourself as an exerciser, and that's a big part of your identity, which it was with the 16 people that I spoke with, when they view themselves back as children, they also see that they were exercisers, even though when they were kids, they were actually probably just playing. So the next theme, juxtaposition. And this is interesting because of the prior presentation, and they're gone, not here, mentioned the groceries, because this is something that people, one of the participants said, I don't want to be one of those people who can't pick up my groceries. So I keep exercising. I don't want to be one of those people who can't go up the steps. And so what I see this as a person viewing themselves and taking themselves in different contexts and seeing, you know, how would they fit into that? And that's the sort of the juxtaposition label. So in this instance, and I look back at some other older research called Possible Selves Theory by Marcus and Nurius, I think in 86, and then it was applied to exercise by Murrow and Martin Guinness, I think in 2010, and they looked at college students. And a possible self is a viewed imaginary version of the person that can be a good, desired view of your person, or it can be a what they call a feared-for possible self, a negative view. What I saw in this instance was, as a motivator, the fear of a negative view was a strong motivator for people. So they saw themselves in a light that they didn't want to see. The third and most comprehensive theme was evolution. And this sort of ran through a lot of things. And this comes back to that difference in motivation. People's motivation for physical activity underwent some kind of process of evolution through the years. And I will say that about everyone I spoke with was very motivated by social and sometimes competitive, but overwhelmingly social needs when they began to exercise. Most people started in a group or some kind of an organized activity. Now, interestingly, as a side note, I spoke with three married couples and none of them exercised together. None of them exercised with their spouse. So, and I can tell you some funny stories about that. So people started in exercise with a strong social motivation. As time went by, the social motivation really diminished to the extent that a lot of people, most people, well, I would say every one of the 16 did at least some of their exercise alone. Some of them did all of their exercise alone. So, and that, what filled in, what maybe evolved in, was more of a need for activity to meet spiritual and what I called existential needs. Meditation. People use the word prayer, people use the word communing, like communing with nature, being one, being able to observe things. One interesting participant had a different take on what I consider an existential need. This participant said to me, "I'm convinced that this is all there is. There is nothing after the life that I'm experiencing. So I'm exercising because I want as much of this as I can have." So, you know, and you can see up there my quote, "I was the oldest finisher." A lot of people continued to compete, but some people were not, because I talked to several cyclists, runners, people, triathletes, people who do those kinds of activities. Some people were less motivated by winning and going fast than they were by, "Hey, I was the oldest person to finish the half marathon," is what someone told me. Now, that's not to take away the competitive fire that is still there, especially in some of the participants that I spoke with. But what I would say is that people's preparation evolved. There was more of an awareness of injury prevention, there was more of an awareness of recovery time, and there was more of an awareness of being selective about the kinds of activities that were less likely to lead to injury. So again, an evolution in that kind of thing. And what I tied that in with is probably a theory that most people here are familiar with, selective optimization and compensation, Baldus and Baldus, people changing or re-evaluating their goals in the context of what their perceived abilities are to maximize what they can do. So to bring this back together to considerations for research and interventions, which is what I was looking at, I think that, you know, I looked at people who had began their exercise at the beginning of adulthood, so roughly 20s. I am also interested in people who started regular physical activity participation at different adult ages. And in fact, I'm right now speaking with people who began to be regularly physically active in middle age. And that's where I fall. I started at about 40 to be a very regular exerciser. So I'm interested in that and to see how that compares to this group. I would say my research, my findings support the idea that motivations differ, but I'm not sure yet what the process of evolution is. At what point does someone begin to be less focused on competition? And it didn't seem to be a physical deterioration thing per se, but you know, how do those things change? And also, the research that I mentioned before, the Moreau and Martin Guinness, found that there was no real difference in college students between a hoped-for and a feared possible self. I found that everyone was looking at a negative possible self. So I was interested in that. If older adults do look for it, just look at the negative, just afraid of avoiding the negative impacts, or is there ever any consideration of the positive? Now, maybe the most interesting thing, at least to me, that seem to come out of this is what I look at as chronological versus activity age. So I think that people's needs for activity based on the findings from this research differ not so much based on their chronological age, whether they're 65 or 20, but based on where they are in their exercise lifespan. And I'm positing that the social need is stronger for people new to exercise, but not necessarily related to their chronological age. And I think that we tend to think that older people want a social setting, and they may when they're new to exercise. But the older adults that I spoke with who were experienced exercisers really don't care to be in a group. really don't care to be in that kind of a social setting. So I think that's meaningful information to have. I think the role of competition is something we need to continue to think about, even in older adults. Again, I think that we consider that older people are maybe not as fired by competitiveness, and also the existential needs that I think this exercise, that the activities seem to really fill for people. So I do want to acknowledge a couple of things, or make a couple of acknowledgments quickly. Dr. Jeff Hallam, who is my advisor, without whom this research would have never taken place, he encouraged me to embark upon this project. Bob Davis, who's a graduate student at the University of Mississippi, who was not at this conference but validated my interviews, listened to many hours of interviews and validated the transcripts. And last, 16 really remarkable active older adults who had a great impact on my life in speaking to them, and I found to be really inspiring. And it was a privilege for me to be able to spend time getting to know people in this way.
Thank you.